Red Thread by A Myriad. Read by Rhea 314 for Revolutionary Joe. Fandom Gonkutsuo, the Count of Monte Cristo. Pairing Edmond Dantes, Albert de Morcerf. Reading explicit. Archive warning for underage. Summary. The Count prompts Albert to play a game under the guise of a trust exercise. Albert gets very wrapped up in it. Albert takes a gulp of wine, not savoring it one bit, a sure sign of troubled thoughts. I don't understand how a person could intentionally hurt someone they love. The Count thinks it's an ironic start to the conversation, in more ways than one, but he approaches it seriously. It is easy to take another person for granted out of complacency, no matter how deep your love for them. Often this manifests in cruel ways, in thoughtlessness and ingratitude. People are not so much intentionally hurtful as they are ignorant to how others perceive their actions. Albert looks guilty at those words. And yet, at other times, it may be entirely on purpose. To see the one you love in pain, or even to leave an emotional scar on them. A scar? Albert's tone is halfway between horrified and puzzled, so the Count goes on. Is it not natural to want to engrave yourself upon the one you love, so that you will never, no, can never be forgotten? The Count had wished for it himself many times, but all that is left are the dusty ruins of love and memories that inflame vengeance in his heart. Albert's lips part, then fall shut, pressing firmly together. His eyes drop to the table. Before the Count can ask Albert what troubles him, the light voice comes, wistful. You must have loved her very much. The Count has grown used to Albert's sentimentality during their time together, but it always comes as a surprise when it brushes against his festering wounds. He wets his dry mouth with a sip of deep red wine and gives Albert a reassuring smile. It has been a long time since those halcyon days. Time heals many things. Even heartbreak? No, the Count thinks. Darkness stirs in his chest, still fed by his hatred, his bitter rage. He doesn't let the question linger in the air for long. Surely there must be someone you wish to give your own indelible mark, Albert. It's a cheap trick, but a reliable one. Albert stiffens, swallowing. All inquiries of past loves and broken dreams are whipped away by a soft breath and mere jumble of his words. Oh, you know there's no one like that for me. The awkward, stilted laugh that follows is cut short by a weak cough. Albert's restless hands twist at the edge of the napkin. Not exactly like that. But? A sheepish smile. I wish that I could have a lasting impression on you, Count. What makes you think you won't? The Count asks, voice betraying his true shock. Albert is his pawn, his conduit, his fuse, an irreplaceable cog in the clockwork of his revenge. For that reason alone, Albert is full of meaning for him. He had been before they met, too, even as a slew of photographs and lines of information on a screen. But all the data in the known universe could never have prepared him for Albert, the living person. The young boy who had become hopelessly infatuated with him in an instant. Albert raises his head. Well, it's just, you've been all over the galaxy and met so many different people. Your stories are so fantastic, I can hardly imagine them sometimes. I'm just some boy who's only been to Luna once. Even Franz is more worldly than me. Vicomte Morcerf, the Count says, you are the heir to your father's fortune. and the son of the great Paris' space fleet commander, you are hardly just some boy. Rather than consoling Albert, those words make him frown. He scoffs. That's my father's claim to fame, not mine. The count swirls his glass. Don't sell yourself short, Albert. We are friends, are we not? The long sip he takes goes down just a little bitter. Of course we are, Count. I'm not one to forget my friends, especially one who has been so generous and trusting of me despite my unknown status. If it wasn't for you, I don't think I would have had such a smooth integration. I only gave you what you deserved, Count. Time and time again, I find myself being saved by you, whether it's from bandits or my own indecision and aimlessness. Sometimes it almost feels like... Albert pauses, then gives a shallow shrug, hiding his embarrassment with false confusion. Like you're watching over me, as silly as that sounds. The Count can't help but laugh at those words. Albert is closer to the truth than he could ever hope to imagine. That is the first time I've ever been described as a guardian angel. Albert flushes and reaches for his glass to down the last bit in a long pull. I've remembered something you might find interesting that pertains to our earlier discussion. Albert tilts his head curiously, a silent beckoning for him to continue. The Count leans forward, voice deep as he begins. On the edge of the Imperium, deep in eastern space, is a small planet with a very interesting custom. There, the traditional art of threading and weaving is considered an expression of one's spiritual devotion, familial adoration, and yes, even soulful love. The inhabitants have a particular ritual signifying a relationship more sacred and powerful than any other bond, contractual or otherwise, an exchange of absolute trust between two people. He has Albert now. His mouth is open, eyes full of wonder, as the Count spins his tale of a mysterious foreign land. It is a special kind of weaving, wherein one partner creates a pattern by winding thorns about their lover's body. A particular wild vine is used exclusively, but it holds a deadly poison. If tied too tight, those venomous thorns will be driven into the bloodstream. Too loose, and the marks will not be correctly applied, a symbol of weak love and bad fortune. Albert gasps at the idea of it. That sounds horrifying. Why would they put someone they love through something so dangerous? Isn't that what passion is? You once said you wished for an all-consuming love, did you not? The Count smiles as Albert goes still. You are quick to trust others, Monsieur Albert. And yet, that trust does not go very deeply. Carelessly giving out an important treasure like that can lead to terrible things. Betrayal, hatred, regret. What should I do then? Not trust anyone? Albert's voice sounds so small and fragile, the thought alone too terrible for him to bear. It is a possible way to live, but not for one like you. Your soul is much too bright to restrain itself. I suggest you find someone in whom you can believe over any others, and exercise that belief accordingly. Accustom yourself to how true faith feels, and separate it from a lower distinction of trust. It's unnecessary to continue further, but he prods Albert anyway. May I suggest Monsieur Franz, or Mademoiselle Eugenie? While I do care deeply for Franz, and Eugenie as well. Eugenie, I don't think it's either of them for me. Albert's eyes stare straight ahead, and a soft smile comes across his face. You treat me like an adult, Count. You don't hide things from me just because they're unpleasant, and you ask me to aid you if I'm able. No matter how thoughtless I've been, even if you have to rescue me afterwards, you never tell me how foolish I am. The Count doesn't dare turn away from that adoring gaze, even if its intensity sears his face. I trust you, Albert says firmly. Unlike I've ever trusted anyone. You silly boy, echoes in his thoughts, sneered with glee. The Count draws the blinds over Gonkutsuo's intruding feelings, but they peek through the crevices anyway. Another game for Albert to play springs forward in his mind, and from his mouth just as quickly. Then shall we perform our own bastardized ritual? Albert draws back in his chair, blinking. He nips at his bottom lip, once intrigued. Always intrigued in him. Yet unsure what it would entail. How do you mean? A mundane version, without thorns or poison. Even in such circumstances, there requires an exchange of power and faith. You say you trust me. Do you trust me not to betray you? Or take advantage of your most vulnerable state, not to harm you with purpose or through carelessness. The Count had learned the art of tying many years ago, during his time wandering through space in a half-directed daze. He could have never thought he would end up using it here, on this particular person. Albert is too pure, as Gonkutsuo liked to whisper with a mixture of enticement and dread, to let the Count's questions go unanswered. Despite his apprehension, he says, "Of course I do." The Count rewards Albert with a wide smile for his honesty, turning away to look toward the distant elevator. "Bertuccio," he calls out. Though they were alone in this area of his dreamy residence, the special monitoring equipment on his lapel meant that Bertuccio and Battiston could respond to his every need. His voice didn't transmit through normal microphones, but with the proper amplification and equalizing, his words could be audible through the transmissions. Once Bertuccio's deep voice buzzes back from the speaker in his earring, the Count describes the necessary equipment they will need for their game. Bertuccio is as punctual as ever. Before Albert can seriously entertain any second thoughts, he comes drifting across the manufactured sea. Your Excellency. His servant gives a low bow once he lands, then unloads his cargo from the boat, a tea cart and a small trunk. The Count is very thankful for the loyal servants he has acquired over the years. Though their fondness of him was slowly becoming intrusive, they still performed their duties without hesitation, no matter how outlandish they seemed. The Count opens the chest, taking quick stock of the different ropes inside, pretending not to notice how Albert stares. Bertuccio, the Count says, do see that we aren't disturbed unless absolutely necessary. Yes, Your Excellency. A few more moments, and they are alone once more on the small white isle. Albert does not speak until Bertuccio's boat has disappeared behind the fog. What should I do? His voice comes out with hesitation, but the Count can hear excitement lurking behind it. The most vital aspect of this practice is the creation of a one-of-a-kind artwork. If the resulting pattern is not beautiful, any expression of trust or affection consequently becomes muddled and ugly. Albert nods in half-understanding, still waiting for a more obvious answer to his question. What I am saying, Monsieur Albert, is that the first step in such an endeavor is to assess the canvas. The Count stifles a chuckle at Albert's confused blink, eyes narrowing in anticipation. I must ask you to disrobe. That gives a reaction. Albert straightens in his chair, his face flushing. Always so worried about seeming too immature and shy, Albert uses the momentum of his surprise to propel him out of his seat and whips off his jacket. The unbuttoning of his top is done at a much slower pace. By the time Albert sets the garment on the back of his chair, presenting his bare chest, his energy has faded. His fingers rest at the top of his pants, and he spares a glance over his shoulder, suddenly hypersensitive to the openness of the Count's home. Even though he knew it lay deep underground, the facsimile was enough to fool his senses.
"There is no one around but me,"
the Count says reassuringly. The words are enough to draw Albert's trousers down his legs, leaving only the black pair of briefs snugly hugging his body. Albert meets his eyes for a brief instant, unable to suppress his sheepishness any longer.
"Fully undress?" "Of course. How can one expect to fully expose their heart to another if they cannot even expose their body?"
Albert gnaws at his lip, closing his eyes tightly. The Count knows that he'll go through with it, and soon those fingertips dip into the waistband, sliding down his underwear as well, leaving him completely in the nude. Albert resists the urge to cover himself, his hands kept stiff at his sides, as the Count rises from his seat to examine him. After a quick glance over, the Count makes a slow circle around him. Albert's body is slightly more muscular than he had expected, still in the throes of adolescence. The Count brushes the back of his hand against Albert's shoulder blade, noting how the muscles twitch at his touch. The delicately tanned skin is smooth, still mostly hairless and perfect for binding. It would hold the lingering marks well. Albert's face is as tense as the rest of him when the Count finishes his round, cautiously watching him, desperate for any sort of feedback, good or bad. He makes Albert wait for it in silence. Finally, he breaks it.
"And what a canvas this is! I think any creator would be blessed to leave their mark on such a stunning form."
The simple praise is all it takes for Albert to relax. A nervous grin comes to his face as relief sweeps through him.
"Thank God. I was worried you'd be..."
The Count laughs at Albert's childish worries. He had so much more to be concerned with, so much going on that he didn't want to spare a thought to, lest it ruin his illusions. Reckless youth in the highest degree, its own kind of majesty.
"How could I disapprove? Your body is very beautiful, Albert."
Albert's face flushes deeply. The Count leaves him to his thoughts as he returns to the box of ropes on the table. There were a number of thicknesses and colors in the box, but after seeing the blush on Albert's cheeks, one of them stands out more than any other.
"This will do very well, I think,"
he tells Albert, and draws the twist of stark red rope out of the box.
"Red suits you the most, the color of vitality and enthusiasm. Passion. The young pirate I met a short time ago was rightfully cloaked in it, too."
"Count," Albert sputters, "please don't dwell too much on that day."
"Why not? Youth is a wonderful thing. Your brash valor clashing against practiced steadfastness, unfolding in a duel over the sea. I enjoyed watching your egos collide in a pure yet visceral manner. Is it crude for me to admit that?"
"No, that's not what I meant." Albert backpedals over his words in a rushed panic. "It's just embarrassing. I feel like a fool when I remember."
"You have nothing to be ashamed of, Albert."
His tone softens slightly.
"Not then, and not now."
The Count slowly unwinds the rope as he speaks. It catches Albert's attention once more.
"Are you prepared? The rope will be tight and you will be uncomfortable, but you shouldn't be unbearably so. Speak up if you are in pain. Knowing your limits is also an important strength."
The situation fully sets into Albert now. His breath quickens, nose flaring as his pupils widen, yet not one question or even doubt passes his parted lips. Instead, he slowly nods, tentatively eager for the Count to begin. A smirk comes to the Count's lips at the sight. He moves behind Albert, amused by the noticeable flinch in his body when he takes hold of his wrists. As he puts them into position behind Albert's back, laid flat against each other, palms facing, he leans over to murmur just above his ear. "First, I will be tying together your arms like so." Albert doesn't move his arms when the Count lets go, and trails his fingers up the small of his back. "Next, the shoulders, chest, and neck." His hands skate over Albert's shoulder blades and come around to the front, meeting at the center of his chest, fingertips drawing out the future pattern. "Then," the Count says, voice dipping lower, "an elegant column of diamonds spanning from solar plexus to groin." The next line he draws stops just below the navel, forcing out a shaky breath from Albert's throat. "Lastly, if you're still feeling up to it after all that..." The Count's hands creep downward to graze Albert's slim legs. "I shall give you a matching design above the knee." His plans laid out in full detail, the Count withdraws and returns to the table, leaving Albert a moment to collect himself. Albert, usually so talkative, is rendered to complete silence, still reeling from the wealth of lingering touches. The Count almost feels bad about teasing him in this manner when he knows what is to come, but he tells himself that that is the point. And Gankutsuo tells him that Albert is delicious, exquisite, and they should taste more and more of him. One last count of the rope's length, and he turns to Albert. "Shall we begin?"
"Yes, Count,"
Albert breathes out. "I'm ready."
"Excellent."
The Count stays true to his schedule, first tightening Albert's hand securely into position. A gentle push at the shoulder, and Albert takes the cue to turn toward him, as the Count slides the first band of rope underneath Albert's pecs, knuckles lightly scraping at a nipple. A plain harness would still be appealing, but for Albert, he will make it special. The twist of rope slides over Albert's shoulder, and before long he's layered a star onto Albert's breast.
"How do you feel?"
"Fine," comes weakly. "It's just tight." The Count smiles at that.
"Then I'm doing well."
As he prepares for the next step, he casts a quick glance over his handiwork. The particular pose brings out the muscles in Albert's chest and arms, his complexion contrasting just as well against the red ropes as he'd expected. A particular story surfaces in his mind, and he gives a low chuckle. The laughter is unexpected for Albert, who shrinks back with insecurity.
"Is there something wrong?" "Forgive me. I was thinking about a piece of folklore from the ancient Orient. One belief among them is that two destined people are physically bound to each other through a mystical red thread. No matter how far apart or the circumstance, the linked pair will always find each other in the end. Looking at you like this, Albert."
The Count curls a bit of red rope around his fingers and stares into Albert's eyes.
"Perhaps you and I are connected through this bond of fate as well."
He does not mention that traditionally the two are lovers as well, but when he sees the flustered look on Albert's face, he doesn't think he has to.
Do you really think so?"
Albert asks, sucking in when the Count continues on to the next phase and ties a line of knots down Albert's stomach, ending just above his conk. Rather than being tied together, this is far more appropriate for them. Wielding destiny as a weapon, he would wrap that red thread as tightly as he could around Albert, just like this, twisting his body and soul into awkward positions, punishing him, binding him.
"I wouldn't be surprised if it were true,"
the Count says.
"Now, this may be uncomfortable at first. The next knot goes right between your legs. Bear with it."
Albert's thighs part at the mere brush of his hand. The idea that he could take Albert in so many ways at this very moment does the strangest things to him. That insidious voice in his head slips free from its corner again, practically slathering. My friend, is this not a perfect opportunity? Enthrall the young man, parade him in front of your enemies. There are many reasons, many conflicting emotions that rise when he sees Albert's face, but somehow the only one that satisfies him is a mere placeholder. It's too soon. Making Albert his would throw off the rest of his plans, so he won't do it. Never once can he convince himself that he doesn't ache for it. The Count brings himself back to the present as he slides the rope between Albert's legs and twists the next node to sit behind his balls. A near whimper escapes Albert's lips when the Count pulls the rope completely through the back. It will need to be tight for now, but the pressure will ease in a moment. The cord pressed alongside his cock would likely pain Albert if he waited too long, but the Count's fingers work quickly. He stands against Albert's back, working down over his shoulder at the weaving. The ropes draw across Albert's sides to slip between the knots on his stomach and tug the edges of each hole into a diamond. Albert has figured out the pattern now and swallows audibly when the Count reaches the last two knots. Holding back a grin, the Count murmurs, "Relax, Albert. You have nothing to worry about." Yet another silky lie, but right here and now, it isn't entirely untrue. He pulls both ends of the rope through the hole first, then carefully widens it, slipping one side over Albert's groin. A choked gasp out of Albert's mouth only ends up more mangled as the Count adjusts the rope's position. Once satisfied, he steps back, slipping the cords over Albert's ass at an angle to capture each rounded cheek. Albert trembles against him as he breathes hard, but instead of responding to it, the Count dips down, focusing on lacing together Albert's thighs from behind. His hands skim across warm skin as he winds the rope through the necessary loops. He's hardly halfway finished before Albert's voice comes, wavering, "Count, I..." What has made Albert finally speak up is more than obvious. But the Count feigns obliviousness anyway, asking with concern, "Are you all right?" He rises to his feet and turns Albert around, ignoring the soft plea of, "Don't look." It's what the Count had been surely expecting, and yet, he is completely unprepared for it. Albert's eyes are clenched shut, his face colored so deeply with shame that the flush reaches the star at his neck. The criss-crossing lines enrobe him, more sincerely than any other garment, and perfectly framed in the lowest red diamond, on full display, is Albert's youthful cock, hardened and thick with blood. The Count has to catch himself so he doesn't stare, and find his words before Albert notices how long he's been silent. "There is no cause for worry, Albert." He sets a hand against the crook of Albert's neck, waiting for him to meet his gaze. Then he continues, "Even when things are not inherently sexual, when one participates in such intimate activities, it is understandable, even expected, for the body to react accordingly." "You're not bothered by it?" Albert almost sounds as if he doesn't believe him, though he would never admit thinking it. "Of course not. If anything, it is my fault for not explaining how this could happen." Albert's mouth opens, ready to insist that he isn't to blame in the slightest, but the Count halts those words with a finger to his lips. "Do you trust me, Albert?" The tearful face has left Albert for now, replaced by uncertainty. Whenever the Count asks, he knows that the answer will be the same, but it's affirmation, permission, indictment. "I do." "Then let me take care of you." The Count doesn't give Albert the chance to misunderstand his words. He reaches down and very purposefully cups his groin in his hand. Albert gasps out, jerking forward in reflex, and looks up at him as if he's been shocked. Confronted with the Count's generous smile, Albert's scandalized expression fades, and just as quickly he gives in. "I'll try," he whispers. Between the two of them, the Count isn't sure who is being more dishonest. The tension in Albert's body isn't from distress, but anticipation and the fear of it. The anxiousness of a distant dream becoming reality before one can come to terms with it. A part of the Count finds it incredibly satisfying to wonder how long Albert had been fantasizing about an event like this between the two of them. Would Albert have fallen into his bed if he'd asked of it all those months ago on Luna? But sensibility reins it in, reminds him that Albert won't ever make it to his bed, that this will end here and go no further. Good. The reply is belated, but with a hand around his cock, he doubts Albert is very conscious of time. The Count makes him wait a moment longer, so he can remove a single glove and step closer, wrapping an arm around Albert's hips. Then he begins. Albert whimpers as the Count slowly wraps his cool fingers around him, gliding up and down, exploring every inch of his length. Albert's pure heart, still filled with candied fancies, only makes it easier for him to surrender himself. Those pretty words that the Count had cooed about trust and exposure, and red threads are enough to twist this situation into something beautiful. Young love is an incredible filter, indeed. To read being tied up and played with by a much older man is a special bond of fidelity, a romantic notion. It's that part of Albert that reminds the Count of himself, that makes him want to be needlessly cruel, to show him that you are a stupid boy, and love means nothing, and trust only means you're in for more pain in the end. It's an eventuality regardless, because the Count, the man he so deeply admires, will destroy his family and him. The Count is kind, indulgent, everything Albert needs. Albert shudders, pressing his face into the Count's shoulder, as the touch goes further, fingertips dancing across the head. They trail down to his sack and massage the soft skin until Albert is shifting his hips in a fruitless attempt for more friction. The Count reaches between Albert's legs to press the knot settled against his perineum, and when his breath quickens, traces the length of rope up the cleft of Albert's ass. "Count," Albert breathes, half pleading, close to asking for something the Count knows he shouldn't give. The Count quiets him with sensation, gripping Albert's cock once more, stroking hard, faster than before. Albert practically melts against him, knees shaking, unspoken request forgotten and drowned by arousal. "Shh," the Count murmurs. "Don't dwell on anything else right now." The hand on Albert's waist drops slightly, clutching at one firm cheek of his ass. "Focus on this moment alone, right now, between you and I." Albert nearly sobs at the words. The Count knows just how much Albert enjoys it, how his heart thumps when he refers to them so intimately. When he's touching him like this, that doesn't appear to be the only part affected. Albert's cock oozes as the Count gently squeezes the head, the slick fluid coating his fingers. With the extra lubrication, the Count's hand slides smoothly over his length, pumping it with renewed vigor. A moan finally spills free from Albert's mouth at the increased pace, and the Count only encourages those sweet noises further. His gaze moves to Albert's singing lips, and suddenly, he is stricken with the desire to take them between his teeth and suck hard. He looks away before the thought can overcome him. "Oh, I'm..." Another moan, this time filled with urgency. The Count holds him steady. Albert is already showing signs of weakness in his legs, and it wouldn't do for him to collapse now. Albert's chest heaves with labored breath, hips thrusting into the Count's movement, as much as he can in his bonds. He inhales sharply, on the brink, and for a moment, there is nothing else in the world. No past injustices to make up for, no torturous imprisonments or deals with the devil. Just this boy who adores him, who offers his body to him without a second thought. Skin flush against red lines and glistening with sweat, tender throat bared as he leans his head back with a wonderful groan. No reason not to surrender to it and forget everyone and everything. To take him with him, disappearing into the cosmos where no one can find them. And Albert would come, too, willingly. He does, with a gasp, his semen painting a white line on the Count's shirt, and drawing the Count back into the world that is. Albert presses his face into his chest, panting and flinching, when the Count lingers on his cock with a few languid strokes. The Count waits for Albert to stabilize himself, then retrieves a dark handkerchief and wipes his hand. Albert's haze hasn't faded one bit, only grown thicker as he looks up at the Count. If he had free use of his hands, he's sure Albert would be clinging to him. His eyes shift, searching the Count's face.
Count, I...
The Count doesn't let him finish.
You must be rather stiff by now, Albert, he says, stepping back. Let's see how our pattern turned out, shall we?
Albert closes his mouth and nods. He is silent throughout the untying process, and the Count lets him sink into his thoughts, following the ends of the rope back to their source. Albert shivers as the Count pulls them over him, touches as faint as fluttering butterflies. It ends where it began, with a binding at his wrists. The Count holds Albert's arms while he releases their bonds, slowly letting them down into a relaxed position.
Are you feeling well?
Yes, Albert says, voice finally returned.
My shoulders ache a little, but that's all.
He stretches out and rubs at the sore muscles, faltering slightly when his eyes catch the impressions on his wrists.
I'm glad to hear it.
The Count takes a good look at him, at the intersecting marks and spiraling rope imprints, the lingering semen at his stomach. Submission in its clearest form. One finger traces the star at Albert's chest, but he ignores the longing that comes to Albert's face at the action.
I dare not think anyone could criticize such a lovely work.
The Count withdraws and delivers a small bow.
Thank you for your cooperation. I enjoyed creating it with you.
Albert's face turns a bright pink as his head lowers.
I did too.
The Count's earring buzzes to life with a reluctant message from Bertuccio interrupting their conversation.
Ah, Albert. It appears your friend Monsieur Franz has come looking for you here.
Albert blinks twice before realization hits.
The party, he gasps. Oh, Count, I completely forgot I had agreed to meet Franz for an event tonight.
He pulls on his clothes in a hurry, then pauses to glance at the Count over his shoulder.
I'm embarrassed to have to leave so suddenly. You should not be concerned about such minor things, the Count reassures him. Allow me to escort you to the parlor. I ought to greet Monsieur Franz for traveling all this way.
Once Albert is dressed, the Count takes his cloak from where he had left it, drawing it over his shoulders. The Count climbs into the small boat first and lends his hand to Albert as he steps in afterward.
If you are able, I would like to see you again tomorrow. I am very interested to see how our composition has fared in the meantime.
The Count notices the way Albert gingerly runs his hands over a thigh, where the ropes had been but minutes before.
Will it really last that long?
Perhaps not, the Count admits. But we can always make another, if you like. Albert would like that very much, the Count knows it, but he restrains himself to not seem overeager, fingers still rubbing at the pattern through his slacks. Albert eventually acquiesces. If I have time, I will. Franz rises to his feet as soon as they enter the room, relieved to find Albert in one piece and suspicious of the Count, as always. The Count doesn't wait for Albert to excuse his tardiness, taking up the task in his stead.
Good evening, Monsieur Franz. I must apologize for keeping Monsieur Albert so busy, he says with a laugh. I had him quite preoccupied with a certain game, unaware that I was keeping him from his arrangements.
Franz's eyes narrow, fixing on him for a long moment.
I'm glad to see you are well, Count.
The curt greeting lacks any warmth. His attention moves to Albert, and he sighs when he sees his guilty fidgeting.
You're going to make us late again, you know.
Albert grows indignant, the flare of temper reminding the Count just how young he is.
I know, I just lost track of time. I'll give Marquis G my deepest regards when we get there.
With a bow of his head to the Count, he bids him adieu.
Thank you for having me today.
Good night, Count. He turns away, but the Count reaches out for his elbow and drags him close. He leans down to whisper discreetly into his ear.
May I recommend a pair of gloves for tonight?
Of course, any hint of discretion in front of Franz is demolished when Albert blushes hotly, slapping a hand over one wrist, where the marks show past the end of his sleeves. Franz raises an eyebrow at the intense response, and his sight soon settles on the exposed lines. His brow creases as he comes forward, snagging Albert's other arm.
Come on, Albert, he says, hurriedly pulling him along, trying to increase the distance between them as much as possible. I wish you a good night, messieurs,
the Count says. Franz ignores him, and Albert shoots him a small smile before following his overprotective friend into the elevator. Idly curious, the Count presses in the end of his left earring, activating the ambient microphone in the watch he'd given Albert long ago.
Fly rude, Franz!
Cuts in at the middle of Albert's annoyed sentence.
Me, rude, Franz scoffs. You're the one who kept me waiting for an hour.
Was it really that long? Albert sounds surprised.
I didn't realize how much time had passed. I meant to meet you after having a short drink, but I ended up getting, distracted.
A few moments pass, and Franz's voice comes, low.
What's with those marks, Albert? What did he do? He didn't hurt you, did he?
Of course not, Franz. You're acting ridiculous.
You always do when it comes to him.
Albert adds, what I do on my own time is none of your business.
It is until it bites into mine.
Franz doesn't push further and changes the subject.
Speaking of time, the guys were wondering if you were going to make it tomorrow. You didn't give a straight answer yesterday.
I don't think I will, Franz. I just remembered that I agreed to do something tomorrow. Satisfied, the Count mutes the transmission once more. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.